Welcome to America's Jobs Team. At Consultant Connect, we believe the greatest force for change is a job, but it requires amazing, talented economic developers. Each week, we will go deep with America's jobs heroes on their leadership journeys, with the belief that when leaders get stronger, their communities thrive.
Welcome, everyone, to the America's Jobs Team podcast. This is Carla Sones, and I am delighted to have on the podcast today Dan Breen. Dan is from Jones Lang LaSalle. He's an accountant by education, works hard in the division now, you know, really known for being an incentives expert and helping those companies make site location decisions. But I'm really excited to hear about his leadership insights. He is really involved in his community. He has worked in several different corporations and on the consulting side for a while as well. And I'm just really excited to hear what his thoughts are on leadership today and what advice he would give to us. So listen in for Dan Breen. Well, Dan, welcome to the America's Jobs Team podcast. We are just thrilled to have you on the line today and to be able to pick your brain a little bit about your career and leadership as you see it. So thank you for taking time out of your schedule to join us. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Carla. It's always a pleasure to work with you. And I've enjoyed listening to the podcast. So it's going to be fun to participate here.
Awesome. Well, as you know, the America's Jobs Team podcast was really designed to focus on economic developers and site consultants, because here at Consultant Connect, we believe that the greatest force for change is a job. And we know that the work of economic developers and site consultants in that work that is done together is often bringing jobs to a community. And that work is really hard. And we know that leadership in those roles is also extremely difficult. So this podcast was really designed to pick the brains of leaders that are involved in this work and to just provide an opportunity for reflection and advice on how to continue to grow in one's leadership career. So I'm going to throw a few questions at you today and we're going to have a little fun with this. So we always start out with kind of the hurdles that leaders are facing. We know that, you know, sitting mid-year 2019, there's rumors of another economic downturn and, you know, things are just different than they were even 10 years ago. What do you feel is the biggest challenge that is facing leaders today?
Well, to your point, Carla, I think it's really change management. We are constantly adjusting the changes, whether it's in our business and politics and the economy, in really, you know, the very way that people think and act these days. It's unsettling for the people who work here and the people who I work with and who work for our team. The days where you could kind of set a course to your career and maybe even your life based on certain core assumptions that you could expect to remain constant for the next 40 years, those are really long gone. My job and those of the people that work for and with me is constantly evolving. How do you manage that? Well, we try to encourage strategic thinking, both organizationally and individually. What do we think is coming next? How are we going to deal with that? I try to demonstrate and I expect flexible thinking. You know, we have to be agile. There's so many changes. We have to be able to absorb it and isolate it and convert it into opportunities. Those opportunities can be tremendous if you can make that happen. And one of the great things about JLL, and you know, I think a lot of companies these days, is that nobody says no to new ideas and initiatives. So it's really about expecting change, dealing with it, and converting it into opportunity. And that's what we try to do every day.
I think you're 100% dead on with just the focus on needing to be agile as leaders in today's world. And I see a lot of leaders that are just entering their career that, despite growing up in the age of social media, there still is that struggle of learning how to manage change and how to manage expectations, your own and others, as you kind of are in this constantly evolving world. Outside of just that agility and ability to kind of pivot and being open to new ideas, is there a characteristic that you believe that every leader should possess? And is there somebody that's been a really good example of that characteristic for you, Dan?
Well, I'm going to refer back to some reading I've been doing lately. Diplomacy, to me, is a really big one. How do you get a diverse group of people and sometimes, you know, cross functions moving together in the right direction for your business? How can everybody be made to feel like they're making a contribution? How can all the things that need to get done in time and with superior quality and results? good leaders have so many attributes. You know, Ron has put together some good lists over the years. But I think diplomacy, which in and of itself incorporates a lot of skills, a certain lack of ego, a willingness to listen to and consider input from others is really important. And the reason this is top of mind for me is because I've been doing some reading on D-Day in recent months. You know, the 75th anniversary was June 6th. And Dwight Eisenhower's conduct in his role of Supreme Commander was like remarkable to me. He didn't have the reputation or in certain respects, the experience or especially the ego of a lot of the people he had to manage. But he was extraordinarily competent and he found a way to shepherd all those diverse personalities from Winston Churchill to Charles de Gaulle to Montgomery to Patton and many others towards their ultimate objective. He also took full responsibility for the success or failure of that enterprise, which is another significant attribute of great leaders, and he succeeded. And to me, it's one of the great sort of underrated examples of leadership in history.
I think that's an awesome example of amazing leaderships. And it really strikes me, you know, you say diplomacy. It's not something that I think we hear enough about in leadership. But as you were so articulate in the way that you were able to wrap up, diplomacy is really having that lack of ego and, you know, being able to get people going in the same direction with the same goal in mind. And I think it's definitely something that seems to be lacking in a lot of leadership roles these days. What is one behavior or trait that you have seen derail individuals' careers? And is there something that you are really cognizant in your leadership to guard against in order to make sure that you aren't derailed by that same characteristic?
In a word, I would say that it's fear. Maybe it's fear that other people are going to leave or outshine you. Maybe it's fear that change will overwhelm you or your practice or your business. Fear of external forces that you can't control. Whatever it is, you know, fear breeds defensive thinking and ultimately, I think, a negative mindset that drives people and eventually even customers away. It's not always easy to overcome those feelings. We all suffer them sometimes. I know I do. But you've got to send a positive message to your team and your customers that whatever changes occur, whatever challenges we face, we're going to find a way to work through them and succeed. How do I guard against that? You know, that's something, honestly, a lot of times I wish I did better or I had a more structured way of dealing with. I do some journaling. It's amazing how writing things out helps clarify my thinking. And I talk through issues with some of what I call my consiglieres. One in particular is a great sounding board for me over the years. A lot of tough love, but he really helps me out in difficult times. And I use different people, I work with different people in my life in different areas, but I do find that positive, honest feedback from people close to me helps me to deal with my bad moments. I've heard great things about meditation as well, though I haven't really fully incorporated that into my life. I've dabbled in it. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, you've got to be able to overcome fear and just, again, send the message to your team, to your customers, and even yourself that, hey, you know, we're not going to be daunted by this. We're going to find a way to work around it. We're going to find a way to succeed.
Yeah, I love that you pointed that out because, you know, when we've done this podcast, we've heard a lot of different, you know, examples of behaviors or characteristics that derail people, a lot of them being ego and a lot of them getting caught up in moral failures and all kinds of things. But when you really think about fear, a lot of ego and decisions are made based on feeling fearful. And as you said, you know, it breeds that defensive thinking and you just don't make your best judgment. I mean, scared people do stupid stuff sometimes. And so I like that you pointed that out, but I also really like that you pointed out that having that group of people around you that supports you and can give you honest feedback, but also positive feedback when you need it. And just kind of having that personal, we internally here call it a personal board of directors, knowing that you have a group of people that you can go to that are supportive, that care about you, that want what best for you, but are willing to tell you hard truths and also willing to kind of be there and be your cheerleader when you need that too. And I think that's so important, so important. So I'm so glad that you mentioned fear is one of those behaviors.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think you've got I think your personal board of directors is probably a better way to put it. I've watched The Godfather too much, but, and plus this guy's half Italian, but it's a great, great resource for me. And it really makes a difference.
So Dan, you have a lot of leadership years left in you, but you've definitely led for a while and been an extremely respected member of the site selection community for as long as I've been in this business. And so I'm curious, you know, what advice would you give somebody who is going into a leadership position for the first time?
I think my answer there would be, don't wait. You know, those first 100 days are really critical. I can think of one time in my career where I really set myself up for failure because I was frankly a little bit overly leisurely about putting my toes in the water, kind of thought there'd be an understanding if I didn't fix the business right away, you know, there'd be time and whatever. And that's not really the case. Regardless of how young you might be or how little experience you might have in a certain role, you're almost certainly going into that role because you're seen as the right person for it, at least at that point in time. And you've got attributes, maybe you don't even see them yourself, that give you the best opportunity to succeed in the eyes of the people making that decision. But you have to grab that moment. Move forward, be proactive in that role, earn the confidence of your team, and show them that they can win with you in command. Well, actually winning or succeeding helps too.
Absolutely. When you think about, you know, how you're kind of investing in your own leadership, I always like to ask leaders who are on the podcast, you know, what other podcasts are you listening to, books or conferences do you go to that kind of are ways to kind of keep your saw sharpened and ways that you're investing in your own leadership? Is there anything that you're doing or reading or following in order to keep your leadership kind of polished?
You know, there is, and it's, you know, hopefully, you know, I aspire to having it a lot more polished, frankly. But, you know, a big one is that I read a lot. You know, you mentioned that, whether it's biography or history or business or sports or personal development. One of the things that fascinates me is how people succeed and how they do that with their own different styles. I mean, I mentioned Eisenhower. He couldn't have been more different than like Churchill or FDR or Patton. But for that role at that time, he was the right person. And there are so many stories like that. This week, I finished up a biography of a guy named Lamar Hunt, who's probably not overly well-known, somebody you may never have heard of. He was from a famous oil family in Texas. His father, at least at one time, was the richest man in the world. And he just wasn't cut out like his brothers. They'd followed their father into the oil business. He was a mild-mannered, like low-key guy. And what he really cared about was sports a lot. So what he did is, because he couldn't buy a team in the NFL, he founded the American Football League while he was still in his 20s, for which 10 teams, including the Kansas City Chiefs, which his family still owns, were absorbed into the NFL within 10 years. He was in the Pro Football Hall of Fame before he was 40. He went on to be one of the founding owners of the Chicago Bulls NBA team, essentially created the professional tennis tour, and played a huge role in the development of soccer in the United States. He owned three MLS teams at once before he passed away about 10 years ago. He did a lot of other stuff as well, but and I picked up this book totally by chance, but the story to me was fascinating, and his style was completely the opposite of what you'd expect from the son of a famous Texas oil baron. He was like this low-key guy. He liked scrapbooking, you know? But the guy was successful, like insanely successful, on his own terms. So I really enjoy that, you know, learning about other people's lives is like how they use their particular attributes and circumstances to steer to success. I would also say that I'm a big fan of podcasts. It's such a great medium, and I feel like I'm like discovering it more by the week. There are so many great resources. I mean, you know, Always Forward's a great one. I like Tim Ferriss, Brian Koppelman, Gary Vee, and a bunch of others. There are some really great sports podcasts and you know, history-related podcasts. And put it all together, and there's just a wealth of information from great leaders from all walks of life. To me, that's been a really helpful resource in my personal leadership journey.
Yeah, I love reading and podcasts too. And it's so funny because most of my time spent commuting is spent listening to books or podcasts. And so occasionally when I hear a new song on the radio, I'm like, man, I may need to listen to the radio for a little bit here. I might be getting out of touch because I'm always listening to somebody talking. So Dan, this week, you know, I'm not sure exactly when this podcast will be released here in the next couple of weeks, but this week marked September 11th and such a critical day in our history. And one of the questions that we like to ask on this podcast is, you know, about being an American and specifically about what it means to you to be an American. And I know that, you know, on this week, it probably means more to a lot of us than, you know, what it did way back, you know, even 10 years ago. but what it for you does it mean to be an American?
Well, that's a great question. And first of all, let me touch on September 11th, because as the son and grandson of NYPD officers, that day has a lot of meaning to me. And what those guys did, what those people did, was a tremendous, tremendous thing. And it really does and continues to touch my heart. But what I'd start with here is that, you know, my paternal grandparents came here from Ireland about 100 years ago as teenagers with basically nothing. And they went through some very tough times once they met and married. They had to go through the Great Depression. My grandfather worked three jobs. He was a cop, a construction worker, and he drove a train on the weekends to support not only his family, but some of his brothers. They lost two children, possibly to polio, and my father was born all within the same two-week period, 1936. Then World War II and rationing and everything that came with that. My father fought in Korea, so they had a son go to war. And they overcame all of that, and they ensured that their kids, their four surviving kids, were educated. And well, 100 years later, though they've long since passed on, they have 11 grandchildren who are attorneys and engineers and CPAs and financial analysts and whatever, and more great-grandchildren than I can easily count. It's really a tremendous legacy from virtually nothing. And that's a pretty great story. And I guess, to me, I ask, could that have happened anywhere else? And by the way, my mother came here as an immigrant and made her way. And my wife's grandparents and mother, so many folks have similar stories. This isn't just a Breen story. I just use that as an example. But being American means to me that I'm fortunate enough to have been born and live in the greatest country in the world, the nation that provides an opportunity to anyone, literally anyone, who's willing to work hard and use the tools that this country provides to advance themselves and their family. We're not and have never been a perfect nation. There's no such thing. But we have evolved, and we aspire to be a more perfect union. And we have been, more often than not, a force for good in the world. I've raised my two daughters and my two sons to be very appreciative of those opportunities, because they too have them by virtue of being here. So I hope that answers your question.
It was an amazing answer to my question. I'm so glad that I asked that question. And it almost brings tears to my eyes, because I think that you're so right. You know, we are so fortunate. And, you know, there's so many different stories of that same kind of tremendous legacy that people have left that have been virtually out of nothing. And this is the place where people are still coming to make their dreams come true, and is still the greatest country in the world in my book as well. So one last question before we get you on your way and off to the rest of your day, Dan. You know, you, as I mentioned previously, you still certainly have a lot of years left in your career. And I know you've got some exciting things yet to come. But you've also had a lot of success already. And when you reflect on the first half of your career now, what would you say, you know, are you most proud of? Is there a specific, you know, announcement that really stands out to you? Or is there something that you've been able to accomplish that you look back and say, you know, that accomplishment makes me really, really proud of the work that I've done?
Another good question. You're throwing me some tough ones today. It's like you've done this before or something, Carla. So I guess I would say that I'm most proud of three things. First, that I've worked hard to obtain certain credentials. I went to night school for 7 years that have helped me to advance my career. I think that sets a positive example for my kids, and I'm proud of that. Second, that I've been able to adapt when confronted with adversity. I went from a corporate guy to a consultant to an at-risk consultant a few years back. One piece of advice I give to young people is to bet on yourself. I probably waited too long to do that. And I tried too hard to take the safe path in my career. There's no such thing as a safe path anymore. You know, gamble on yourself and do it early. Mm-hmm. I guess, though, I would say that I'm proud that I've been able to reinvent myself when I've had to, with at least some degree of success. And I guess the third thing, finally, that I've managed to be a reasonably successful professional while being an active and involved husband and father and making some contributions in my community. You know, I coach, I'm on the board of ed, I chair our volunteer economic development advisory committee in town, and so on. So I guess I look back, and those are the things that matter to me, that I've worked hard, that I've been able to kind of adapt to the change and the fear that I've confronted in my career. And hopefully I've been a good father, husband, and member of my community while doing it.
Absolutely. Well, it's been incredible to have you on the podcast today. I certainly have a whole page full of notes myself. I think your answers were enlightening and just really well thought out. And I appreciate you being on the podcast. And I certainly can say, from the work that I've had a chance to do with you, that you are not only really respected by myself and many others, but that every time I see you, you remember to ask about how my family is doing. You talk about your family, and it's just refreshing to be able to be around people who do care about, you know, work and also care about just the lives of the people that they're doing it with. So really appreciate your partnership, your friendship in this work. And I hope that you have an amazing rest of your week. And I actually get to see you next week. So I will see you then.
All right. Outstanding, Carla. Thank you so much. Great opportunity. Love the work you guys are doing. And really, it's inspirational to me to see, you know, to watch what you guys have achieved and take lessons from that. So thanks again for this opportunity.
What an amazing conversation with Dan today. I just knew that I was going to need my notebook and a pen, and I sure did. I love what he had to say about diplomacy, strategic thinking, and agility. I just think he was spot on with a lot of the things that have been really resonating with me as I coach other leaders today. Also looking forward to a conversation that we're about to have next week. So Nick from our team is going to be having a conversation with Greg Simon from the Metro Atlanta Chamber next week. And Greg is an amazing economic developer. He has over 20 years of experience, and I'm sure that it's going to be another one of those weeks where you're going to want to tune in with your notebook and pen. So we'll talk to you then.